everyone, and welcome to The Juiciest Bits. I'm Mandy Elliott, soon to be joined by my co-host Charlie Barber, and today we have a treat for you. We are doing a follow-up episode. Last time we talked about All the President's Men, and this time we are talking about Dick, which is Andrew Fleming's 1999 parody, or somewhat of a parody of All the President's Men, starring Kirsten Dunst and Michelle Williams. It is a romp, and we have a great time talking about it, and we hope you have a great time listening. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of The Juiciest Bits when we talk about Dick.
All right, here we go. Woo. I'm Charlie.
I'm Mandy.
And this is
The Juiciest Bits podcast.
Extravaganza.
Stop
recording.
Adding words. I can't read your mind. I don't know how else to tell you.
I'll just hold up like poster board next time.
Oh, that was like cue cards.
Yeah, or cue cards. I mean, much easier to manhandle cue cards than a poster board. But, you know, whatever gets the job done.
It's true. It's true.
So last time we talked about All the President's Men.
We did.
Which means that today we have to talk about its counterpart movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The cherry to its pie, the toe to its jam, the Keanu to its Reeves.
Well said.
Thank you. What is it? What is the movie?
The movie is Dick.
The movie.
The movie.
Not the penis.
Nope. Dick the movie.
Dick the movie. It doesn't actually have the tagline, the movie.
No, it's just to be clear, the movie is called Dick.
Yeah, I just like every time I searched it online, I would like break out into a light sweat. Like, please, Google gods, give me a nice thing.
Just turn your safe search on. Yeah.
Oh, I could have done that. I was like, is now the time? Oh no. Will I see something I do not want?
At least you live,
clutching my pearls.
You live in a place where no one will sneak up behind you and be like, what you Googling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do raise a good point. Although I think I might have also looked it up when I was at work. So that was
fun.
Yeah. No one looks at my search history anyway, because I would have been fired long ago for unrelated reasons.
Very good.
Oh my God. So anyways, we're talking about Dick.
Yes. The movie made in 1999.
Oh my God. What a time for films.
Indeed.
Yeah. And like, okay. Also, this is a recommendation by our number one fan, who also pointed out to me that we haven't yet done like a ditzy teen girl 90s comedy.
That's true.
Which is a serious gap in our film oeuvre.
Our what?
Oeuvre. Eggs.
Yes.
Oeuvres.
Our oeuvre.
Oeuvre. Oeuvres. Oeuvre.
There you go. You're getting it.
See, the problem with that word is that I think egg first.
Yeah.
And then I get confused. Yeah. It's my extensive knowledge of the French language that does me in. Again. Yet again. Foiled by French. Foiled by my fluency. Anyways. So, I had never heard of Dick before.
You're gonna hear a lot all of giggles right.
Yeah,
today,
yeah.
Friends.
We'll get it out now.
Yeah.
Pump that dick for all it's worth. Did you know about Dick?
I did know about Dick.
You did? What's your history with Dick?
Well, I don't really...
Have you seen a dick before?
I had not seen that dick before. I watched it with Aaron, and we were talking about how we've both seen the poster so many times or like scrolled
past. Oh, have you really?
Yeah, like I'd heard of it, I was interested in it, but it's just one of those that I never got around to seeing. Mm-hmm. So again, thank you Veronica for getting us to watch this, because I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, I loved it so much.
And it's so fun and such a good post All the President's Men watch, especially now that you're such an expert on Watergate.
I am now Watergate expert in addition to being fluent in French. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Like, having watched All the President's Men so recently, and suffered, obviously. Dick was just pure joy.
Mm-hmm.
But it did make me glad that we had seen it so recently, All the President's Men.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dick is a Watergate satire, but it is also really specifically like an All the President's Men spoof.
Very much so.
Very pointedly. And like, yeah, all the stuff with Woodward and Bernstein, like was just like essentially like, you know, ripped out of All the President's Men. And even all the like the use of newspaper headlines, mm-hmm. and the news footage usage. It's like so many Easter eggs.
Yeah.
To the point where I wasn't quite sure why the director, Andrew Fleming, chose to do this. Like, I mean, he also directed a movie called Hamlet 2, so who's to say? But yeah, it actually reminded me of when I had rewatched Men in Tights after one of my regular screenings of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Oh, yes.
Which made me realize that, number one, Men in Tights does not benefit from rewatches.
No.
I'm sorry to tell you, I do not recommend it. It's real bad.
I would imagine it doesn't hold up.
It does. Well. No. Mm. But Men in Tights is also just like entirely Prince of Thieves send up.
Yeah.
Like it is, it does not make sense as a Robin Hood story kind of in isolation, because mm-hmm. all of its references are directly from Prince of Thieves, to the point where I was like, why does this exist? Like this, this feels like a direct vendetta against Kevin Costner. I don't quite understand. I
mean, Kevin Costner, I'm just going to say it, maybe wasn't the best choice for Robin Hood.
How dare you?
He misplaces his accent.
Doesn't matter. He's got a great mullet. We don't he care. Does, okay. We love him for his mullet.
Yes, his mullet is excellent. I will give you that.
Come on.
Oh. Everyone else takes it so seriously, and he's like...
His mullet?
The whole movie.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like, I'm Robin of Locksley. And it's just like, everyone else is trying,
but he's also grumpy and sort of like a little bit husky, so I think mm-hmm. he's like... He's being very serious about it, even if he's not, you know.
But, like, not Yellowstone serious.
No.
Like, Field of Dreams serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a different time for him. I feel like he's got a different serious now that he's, like, an old man serious.
Yeah, he is a good...
Or he was, like, a young angsty man serious before.
Mm-hmm. Played a lot of dads. I mean, now he still plays dads, but, like, older, crustier dads.
A lifetime of dads.
Yeah.
Not in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, though.
Exactly, yeah.
His one non-dad role.
Exactly. So he was cast a little bit against type, maybe.
Oh, and,
yeah.
Rascal. Oh, I love that movie. That is a peak movie for
me. It's so good.
It is a flawless movie.
I love it. I'm just
accents
saying.
Be damned. Let me... Oh, but okay. Wow. We need to get back on track. This is not a Prince of Thieves podcast, although we should make a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Obviously.
We should make a podcast series. I have so much to say about Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. I could talk all the day long. Anyways. Okay. So that made me think. Do you think that Dick makes... as much sense, would it make as much sense if we hadn't seen All the President's Men? Or would some of the choices have seemed arbitrary?
I think definitely some of the choices would have seemed arbitrary. Like, yeah. This is so clearly making fun of All the President's Men.
Yeah.
That it's, I think if I hadn't seen it, especially so
yeah, so fresh in the memory bank.
Yeah, I wouldn't have noticed. Mm-hmm. And it maybe would have meant that I liked the movie less,
mm-hmm.
but because I recognized those Easter eggs, it was just such a romp. It mm-hmm. was so much fun to watch, because it's just like, yeah, what if Deep Throat were two teenage girls who thought they were dog walkers? Like, it's
I mean, they are dog walkers. They
I
don't
mean,
think
yes,
they are.
They are dog walkers.
They are also other things, but
yeah, fair enough. But yeah, it's just it's so fun.
It's so fun. Well, and also, especially from, like, All the President's Men being so self-serious and mm-hmm. self-important.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, okay, it's, like, the story written by two dudes who, like, yeah, did a very impressive, like, journalistic piece. And now they're literally writing their own story. So it makes sense that they're, like, pointing themselves as the heroes. But, like, oh, man, this was... just like a beautiful, like, you know, lance to that. Just like, ooh, just puncture that.
Yeah, and that's what I love about satire and, mm-hmm. and these sorts of lampoons,
mm-hmm.
Is that it's taking something that takes itself very seriously
mm-hmm.
and is just saying, yeah, this happened,
mm-hmm.
but what if it happened this yeah. way? And it's like, it's not lying about what happened per se. It's just, you know, suggesting. They didn't know who Deep Throat was at that point.
That's right. So, they didn't. No. Yeah.
Could have been two teenage girls. Who knew?
It really could have.
Yeah.
Although, oh man, I've got a juicy tidbit to talk about later on.
Okay.
So we'll get to that. But may I do a summary?
Please do a summary.
Excellent. I shall do a summary. All right. We open with fake interview footage of a dude interviewing some old guys who happen to be Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, our old pals. And the interviewer is like, aha, at long last, old Carl and Bob will now reveal who Deep Throat was. And Bob, who's played by Will Ferrell, is like, dude, we're not going to tell you. But then the interviewer almost gets Carl to break by tricking him, after which Bob and Carl duke it out on air, and Bob says the immortal line, you smell like cabbage. And this is an SNL sketch. This yes. is fully an SNL.
Slash Kids in the Hall, because that's a Kids in the Hall reference.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Because the other guy's from Kids in the Hall.
Okay, so it's a, oh my god, it's a crossover.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crossover event. Cut to a typewriter telling us that it is 1972. Deja vu? Have we, I feel like we've seen this before.
Somewhere.
Tip of my tongue. Arlene, Michelle Williams, and Betsy, Kristen Dunst, are two boy-crazy 15-year-olds composing a letter to some win-a-date with a blandly handsome celebrity contest. And my eyes, like, don't even register his facial features.
He's very blah.
He's so blah. Yeah. Even, like, there are posters all over Arlene's bedroom walls, and my eyes just, like, ugh. I just see, like, generic face.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever enter one of those contests? Like, no. Win a date? I feel like they were still around when we were younger.
I think they were, but I just never thought I would win. I don't know.
Aw, buddy.
I don't know.
The only ones I could enter in were Christian ones through Focus on the Family's Brio magazine.
Gross.
So, and it was mostly like, win a date with your youth pastor or something.
Win a courtship.
Yeah, win a courtship with the Lord. It's like,
you have
gross.
To get married after 3 dates.
That's the real deal with the devil. You do get a date, but then you have to get married.
Yeah, because you're not as pure as you once
because
were.
Because you have been besmirched by going to Wendy's. Some old dude.
Is a Frosty just a Frosty?
This is the question that we ask ourselves in those purity meetings.
Yes.
When is a Frosty not a Frosty anymore? What's the line between Frosty and not Frosty? I digress. All right.
Anyway.
When Arlene and Betsy sneak out of Arlene's apartment, because somehow it makes a difference if they dump the letter in the mailbox at midnight rather than the next morning.
But the contest closes at midnight.
But the mailbox is literally outside their front door.
Yeah.
Who's knowing?
I don't know. That's a good point. I don't know.
No one's standing at that mailbox stamping
the
letters that go in.
They're teenage girls. They're excited.
Okay,
they're fine. Rule followers.
Oh, that's right. So as they sneak out, they put the old tape over the latch trick so the building's outside door doesn't lock behind them. Now here's the first major reveal. Arlene lives in the Watergate building. And it's the night of the infamous break-in. The spy dudes are already doing shenanigans with phones and stuff, but the security guard sees Arlene's tape job and is like, someone broke in! Call the police now! And as Arlene and Betsy sneak back upstairs, they see a suspicious man, TM, who they think is a jewel thief because he's talking about gemstones. So they scream at him and run off home. Next morning, we hear in radio announcer voiceover that 5 dudes were arrested last night following a break-in at the Watergate building, and one of them used to work at the CIA. But we don't care about that, because our girls Betsy and Arlene are lined up outside the White House building because they are going on a class tour before the main event of the day, which is a trip to McDonald's. And then we get Kristen Dunst's immortal line, French fries, French fries. girl is excited. Once inside the White House, they do some art criticism and then talk to a guy they think has toilet paper on his shoe, only gasp, It's the jewel thief from the previous night, and the piece of paper that was on his shoe is not toilet paper at all. One guess what it is.
Do you want me to guess? I know what it is.
Oh, okay, fine. Don't guess. I'll tell you. Okay. We both know. It's not a surprise. It's a secret list of names with dollar amounts for some creep dude. And since no one is going to the gift shop at the end, Arlene and Betsy pocket this list as a souvenir just for fun. Then the dude, Liddy, is like, hey, my boy Haldeman, see those girls over there? Pretty sure I ran into them last night when I was breaking into the Watergate building. Also, I seem to have mislaid my creep donor list somewhere. Do you think we should do anything about this? Haldeman is like, don't worry, my boy, I got this. So he takes Arlene and Betsy aside for a weird chat on whether they have friendly thoughts about President Nixon. He's like, do you have friendly thoughts? Do you have unfriendly thoughts? How friendly are your thoughts?
Weird questions to ask teenage girls.
It's a weird question for, a man to put teenage girls in a room alone and then ask them. It's very weird. But then he's called away to have what sounds like an important bagel conversation with his wife. While he's talking sesame versus poppy seed, a door opens from the Oval Office and Nixon's dog Checkers runs out toward the girls. President Nixon follows, a bit pissed that his dog likes two randoms more than him. He had just been complaining that his dog seems to not care about him. And Haldeman is still worried about the blonde damage control situation, so Nixon says the girls should be the official White House dog walkers so he can keep an eye on them. Arlene and Betsy are stoked about Checkers. They excitedly agree. This is the best day ever. They end up missing McDonald's, but, you know, all in the cause of duty and patriotism, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. Arlene and Betsy decide to make the president cookies in gratitude, and end up making accidental weed cookies.
Yeah.
Because Betsy's brother keeps his weed in a walnut jar.
And says they're walnut tree leaves.
And says they're walnut tree... Okay. Is this a normal storage option?
I've never heard of it.
What myself. Maniacs do this? Who stores dried marijuana leaves in baked goods? Is this like a weird sneaky way of making everything? Like, would the THC somehow leach into the walnut? Or the girls actually chopping up leaves?
I think it's just like hiding in plain sight. I think the girls are chopping up leaves.
So they're just putting it all in there.
But that's not how you make weed baking.
No! Okay, yeah. So yeah. In a movie of like non-stop shenanigans, this felt like the wildest thing. Where they're just like, oh, there's some weird leaves here that we'll just, you know, don't pay them no mind. It's like, okay, all right, well, this is... No thank you. All right, so... Then we have a while in which Betsy and Arlene continue to make weed cookies for Nixon because he's, big surprise, obsessed with their weed cookies. They continue to watch Nixon's dog, and then they tell him to stop the Vietnam War, and he does because he's like, you girls have great ideas about foreign affairs. And then he appoints Betsy and Arlene his, like, special youth advisors?
Yeah,
that's right. And then they go around telling people that they're like his special youth advisors, and everyone's like, yeah, sure, whatever, you're idiots. Also, Arlene gets a crush on Nixon and has this hilarious fantasy dream.
Oh man, it's so good.
About him riding toward her on a white horse, and then they like dance on a beach together.
There's a real Titanic cam moment where they're spinning around. From Arlene's perspective.
It is equal parts, like, so deeply cringe and so funny. But then, right when Arlene is confessing her love for Nixon into his office recorder, she accidentally rewinds the tape too far, and both girls end up hearing snippets of Nixon's hateful office rants before. Now devastated, their eyes fully open. They know everything. The girls run out. And then have a heart-to-heart conversation about how you can't let dick ruin your life. It's like, yeah, okay. Oh, my God. So, it is really funny. Like, you know, dicks are hilarious. It's like, it's true. But, like, all that, like, the knowing use of dick just, like, over and over and over. Yeah. Like, dit was like, okay.
It was very 90s.
Yeah.
But also, you can't let dick ruin your life is just such a good rule of thumb.
It is a very good rule to live by. Yeah, you're not wrong. So now our sweet baby girls are out to take dick down because that dick is dirty. Speaking of taking dick down, this is also roughly around the time that they decide to use the name Deep Throat to crank call the Washington Post.
Can I just congratulate you on your segue?
I think I deserve also a Pulitzer for that. Thank you.
Incredible work. Incredible.
Where are my awards? Where are my awards?
Wow.
So they call the Washington Post, cut to Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein. So stoked to get the call because now they're finally getting some actual info on what has been an investigation that's going nowhere. So they propose to meet up their mysterious caller in an underground car park. When everyone does show up, though, Bob and Carl are appalled to discover that their insider sources are actually two teen girls in trench coats. They look great, though. They look very good.
They do.
Luckily, everyone gets over it because then Betsy and Arlene spill the beans and tell them that the president is behind the Watergate break-in and has a list of creeps that he used to pay everyone off. After Bob and Carl start printing the story, Arlene and Betsy start getting followed by creepy vans. Betsy's house gets broken into, and Arlene's mom gets a boyfriend. It's too many weird coincidences. Now our girls are in too deep to stop, so they break into Haldeman's house and steal a White House tape for Bob and Carl. During which we get possibly my favorite makeout scene of all time between Betsy and an infant Ryan Reynolds.
Very baby Ryan Reynolds.
It might be his first movie role. Like, yeah. He looks like he's like 8 years old. He's not 8 years old, but he looks very tiny. Very wee. When Arlene and Betsy give Bob and Carl the tape transcript, Bob says, "Don't worry, we won't ever reveal you as a source, but not for your protection. We're just, like, literally too embarrassed to tell anyone." Cut to our babies out shopping when they see footage of Nixon announcing his resignation due to all the press that Bob and Carl have been stirring up. And they both sigh in relief, telling each other that politicians will never, ever lie again after this. And then in the final scene, as "You're So Vain" plays, Betsy and Arlene sew outfits out of an American flag and paint a sign that says "You suck, Dick" to wave at Nixon as he leaves the White House for the last time. The end. Ugh. So in summation, I adore this movie.
It's so good.
It is so perfectly batty and so weird and delightful. I was thinking, like, why I'm not usually drawn to this genre of movie. Like, I love Clueless well enough. I feel fine about Legally Blonde. I know that's probably a very homophobic thing of me to say, but, you know, like, it's, you know, like, a lot of these are just like, I'm like, yeah, they're enjoyable, whatever. This one I, like, properly belly laughed, like, so much mm-hmm. of the way through. And I don't know, it just hit, like, it hit me different. And I feel like, yeah, this might be my favorite of this genre, the ditzy blonde conquers the world genre.
Yeah, yeah. That I felt similarly.
Hollywood was obsessed with in the 90s for some reason.
Yeah. I love a buddy comedy. Mm. And this is, they're so rarely made with women.
Yeah.
And with proper perspectives that, you know, experiences that women actually have. And I mm-hmm. think I really loved that this movie is about two teenage girls who are teenage girls.
Yeah.
And they are dumb. Yeah. And they don't know. I mean, they know who the president is, but they don't know anything about anything else. You know, they're kind of demonstrating so much. Like, if we read into this, they grow up in privileged homes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one, they both live in DC, one lives in the Watergate, one lives in Georgetown, and they're so insulated, right? Like, everybody is shocked when Betsy's brother gets his draft letter, and Betsy is able to just convince the president to cancel the war.
Yeah.
So that her brother doesn't have to go, and he's, because he's afraid of them, he's just like, okay, and she's like, great.
Mm-hmm.
And there's never, she never doubts for a second that he would listen to her.
Mm-hmm.
And Arlene too, she's just so pure. She's decided, you know, whoever is in a poster on her wall, that's who she's going to marry. She kisses her posters. She takes them down when people disappoint her.
Yeah.
They draw little doodles and they make clothes and they wear flowers in their hair and they're just so...
Practice signing like Mrs. So-and-so, Mrs. Arlene Nixon.
Yeah. Like it's so... It's just so great because mm-hmm. it doesn't try to make them, you know, any more knowledgeable than any other 15-year-old girl. It doesn't make them too stupid,
mm-hmm.
right? Like they hear the tape and they understand and they,
mm-hmm.
but they're just kids.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
That's, I think, part of it too, where I feel like a lot of other movies of this kind don't have that central relationship that is so, so delightful. Mm-hmm. Like the friendship between Arlene and Betsy is just like, ooh, delicious.
Yeah. And the conflict is never between them.
Yeah.
Which I think is so refreshing.
Yeah. There's never a moment of crisis where like the two of them have to have their inevitable conflict in order to resolve it to then like defeat the bigger bad guy or whatever.
Yeah. And they don't fight over a man.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even stop speaking to one another. They help each other. They are excited for each other. When Betsy finds out that Arlene has a crush on Nixon, she's kind of bewildered at first. And then she's like, oh, he's totally into you. Look at all of these things.
Yeah.
And she's such a supportive friend, even though it's all crap. But she's telling Arlene, or she's giving Arlene hope.
Yeah.
And
she even walks the dog so that Arlene can spend 18 and a half minutes talking into the tape recorder. Yeah. About how much she loves him.
Yeah, like it's, and singing I Love You, I Honestly Love You, the Olivia Newton-John song. And like it's just such a
side note, I adore that as mm-hmm. as like an interpretation of those missing 18 and a half minutes.
Yeah. Like it's just it's like they thought of everything.
Like this makes sense. This makes it's a coherent sense. Narrative.
Yeah. Well, and at the same time, it's like, oh yeah, I would have embarrassed myself like that for love at 15.
Well,
I did.
Of course. And even those like the like weird romantic fantasy that Arlene has about Nixon, where he like. It's Dan Hedaya.
Oh, I love Dan Hedaya. Oh.
We got to talk about Dan Hedaya.
Oh, we do.
But he's like riding on a white horse and she's sitting on the beach and then they twirl a bit.
They grab hands and yeah.
And then he puts his hand on her shoulder and that's like as intimate as it gets. And it's like totally not sexy. It's totally mm-hmm. not like there's nothing. It's just like. Yeah, that's right. That's what felt erotic.
Yeah.
As a kid. And that's what like daydreams were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just this sort of like floaty, sort of like over romanticized, like abstract thing.
Dreaming about being part of a nuclear family of your own.
Mm-hmm.
Like dreaming about being Mrs. Nixon and not,
oh my God,
you know, just
yeah.
Lady on the side.
Like, yeah.
It's like, no, I will
marry will be him. The woman in the house.
I will cause him to divorce Pat and I will marry him.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And just like also how delightfully horny they are.
Yeah.
Like these girls and just like also the audacity of their horniness to just be like, they're like, oh, we can distract them. I'll just put on some lip gloss. And it's so obvious and just like with the scene with the guard.
Yeah.
Where they're walking in and they're like, we gotta sneak in. I'll do it and you sneak around or whatever.
Yeah, Betsy's putting on lip gloss. Arlene is like, I'll do my whistle so the checkers will come. And she doesn't hide or anything. Like Betsy's putting on lip gloss and Arlene has her fingers to her lips whistling for the dog and the guard is like, what is happening?
It's so chaotic.
Because Betsy, like, it's that thing where they're teenage girls who feel like they're hot for like other people their age.
Yeah.
But for older people, they're just like, you are a child. Yeah. And
also like all of your subtlety is like not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think you're being sneaky and outwitting us, but you're not. But then it's delightful then because in do. The end, because they are.
Yeah.
Just yeah. by being so, like, like as open as they are normally.
Yeah. Like, they go into to Nixon's, like, they hang out in the Oval Office. They mm-hmm. walk the dog. They're the youth ambassadors or mm-hmm. whatever. They just kind of walk freely about the White House. And never think for a second that that is weird or that they're being manipulated.
They literally walk in on a room of dudes, like, shredding papers and packing mm-hmm. money into suitcases.
Yeah.
And Nixon is like, oh, I really love paper mache. That's why they're shredding things. And they're like, sounds great.
Yeah. Oh, that explains everything. Yeah. And the adults think they can't possibly be that naive. And so mm-hmm. they start making mistakes because they, you know. They're scared and the girls don't know.
Yeah.
But I think to them, the honesty piece is the most important thing. That's the lack of honesty is what turns them against Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, there's such a united front that, yeah, they have the power of friendship on their side.
Oh, the power of friendship. I love the power of friendship.
Me too.
I think also this movie showing just like how powerful teen girls are in general.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I mean, yeah, this is like borne out by, you know, thousands of campaigns of advertising and stuff like gear it towards teen girls. And then everyone else is going to follow.
Mm-hmm.
But we see even just like a little sliver of that here where the teen like Betsy and Arlene start dressing a certain way and other people start dressing a certain way. Mm. Like they go from prep schoolgirl to like flower child hippie yeah. by the end and other people are following along. They do like the hand gestures, the like peace symbol. And yeah. that's what Nixon picks up in his like. Super cringe photo.
Yeah.
And yeah, so like they're like trendsetters in this like very like unaware way, or not unaware, but like effortless, I guess, is a better word for that.
Well, and I think to the extent where the last scene they're cutting up an American flag, and at one point Arlene says something like, "Isn't it illegal?" And Betsy says, "Not if you sew it back together." And she's talking about sewing it into clothes. So she's making this bikini top
mm-hmm.
and like they're kind of scantily clad in this refashioned American flag when they're holding up that poster on the rooftop to insult Tricky Dick. And it's such a, it just feels like such a snub,
mm-hmm.
right? Like part of the insult in that action is that they're wearing the American flag, but they're just like, this is great. This is an outfit I made myself. Like,
we look fabulous.
Yeah. And so patriotic. And it's, I mean, now we see, you know, American flag underwear, but
yeah,
it's so interesting to me that their intentions don't match the law or what older generations think. And it doesn't phase them at all. They don't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
They just kind of do what they do, and that's how they exert their patriotism or their movement in the world. And it's so innocent and it's so lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the like discrepancy between how they perceive themselves and how other people perceive
mm-hmm.
them
mm-hmm.
is I mean where a lot of the comedy comes from. But yeah, also is kind of the source of their power.
Yeah.
And the secret to their success in all of this. I was thinking about how this movie sort of, you know, in critiquing Woodward and Bernstein, sort of aligns them a little bit more with like as another sort of like emblem of masculine pomposity and sort of like institutional knowledge. So I feel like in All the President's Men, Woodward and Bernstein are like, we're like taking them down, and like, you know, it's sort of an us versus them. And in this, it felt like it felt like there was less of a difference between Woodward and Bernstein and the Nixon administration. Mm-hmm. In just the way the power dynamics worked, and also just in the like the way that they conducted themselves, the sort of like self-seriousness, the self-importance, the feeling that they have a right to know and a right to do, mm-hmm. And a right to sort of like you know, direct these girls.
Yeah, like they're just, they're so charming. Mm-hmm. And I think even with bringing Nixon the cookies, mm-hmm. right? Like these cookies, they're called Hello Dollies. The recipe is cross-stitched in Betsy's kitchen. And at one point, Brezhnev is in Nixon's office and she's handing the cookies to Nixon. And Nixon says, oh, Leonid, you have to try one of these cookies. And the implication is that it eases the Cold War because Brezhnev gets high with them and loves these cookies so much. And he and Nixon are just, you know, broing around having a great old time. And just because these girls...
It's a very audacious claim.
Yeah. Just because they don't know what weed looks like. And they're just, they or innocently, like. Yeah, they're just like, oh, and we made the president his favorite cookies. Oh. And there's also, you know, Nixon was a conservative who was anti-drugs, and here he is doing drugs, loving every second of it.
Loving all those cookies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the gender dynamics were really, really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Because that was the source of so much humor, and just so silly. Oh my god! Like, yeah. Will Ferrell as Bob Woodward and Bruce McCullough,
yeah,
as Carl Bernstein,
yeah,
okay. Just like delightful, and just like, yeah, used as much as I wanted them to be used.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I loved. I think.
Are we pivoting? We're pivoting.
I would be remiss if I did not mention, you mentioned the scene where, the opening scene where Woodward and Bernstein are being interviewed.
Yeah.
And what you didn't mention is that the interviewer is French Stewart from Third Rock from the Sun.
Oh my God. Who is
all dolled up to look like Larry King.
I didn't get that.
And so it's French Stewart as Larry King interviewing Will Ferrell and Bruce McCulloch, making Kids in the Hall references, and just it's I knew I would love it from that very first scene, and we never see French Stewart again, but it was just A++++. But yeah, Woodward and Bernstein from then on were just, they were comic relief.
They're the butts of the jokes as yeah.
Well, especially so Woodward, like you said, plays it straight, but Bernstein is just always up in his grill, just trying to listen in on his phone calls and copy his copy, and like it just kind of makes Bernstein look like a buffoon, which is all the funnier because Bruce McCulloch is wearing a wig that looks God. A lot like Dustin Hoffman's mullet.
It looks.
In All the President's Men.
And he does this amazing thing where he just sort of like brushes it. And yeah. He also like nods his head.
Yeah, it's very flouncy. Mm-hmm. And such
and wears the very tight pants.
Wears the excruciatingly tight pants. And just is a send up of old Dusty Hoffs. And it's just the greatest. And I love it when Will Ferrell plays the straight character. I love it so much because he's just so.
Just I think a ball he's of funnier. Energy. I think he's funnier as the straight character.
I agree.
Just like Tommy Lee Jones is funnier as a straight man as well. Mm-hmm. I recently rewatched Men in Black, but that's a story for another time. Anyways,
also a great movie.
Oh, it's a great movie. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like Will Ferrell is someone who I now feel pretty complicated about in that, you know, he's got his thing and his thing happens and it's so aggressive and abrasive, and I'm kind of bored by it now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when he's used as the straight man and like in these like beautiful little doses, I'm like, oh yeah, this is why I love you.
Yeah. And it's so great that the movie makes such good use of these comedic characters. Like they also have Dave Foley as Haldeman.
That's right.
The chief of staff, another kid in the hall. Mm-hmm. And he also plays a straight man and it's hilarious. He also has a very aggressive buzz cut that adds to his very abrasive character.
Yeah.
And also Harry Shearer plays G. Gordon Liddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the creep list.
The toilet paper creep list.
Shoe. Yeah. And it's like at first I heard his voice before I saw his face. I was like, wait a second. So, like anyone who's ever watched The Simpsons just knows. Yeah, so it's just such a delight to see those comedic actors just being able to go for it. And I mean, especially since Michelle Williams has kind of made her career into a more serious career. Kirsten Dunst has done a lot more serious things.
Both of them very, really varied, though.
Yeah.
Like, really varied.
Yeah.
But not necessarily comedic.
Right. And I don't think I would have... Like, I knew they were in it, but I don't think... How do I put this? If I found out for the first time now that Michelle Williams and Kirsten Dunst were playing like ditzy blonde characters in this send up of All the President's Men, I would not know what to think of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas
it's a hard sell.
It's a hard sell. Yeah. But it just reminded me how good they both are.
Yeah. Even from the beginning, like as wee little babies.
Yeah.
Like, they're not, I mean, their characters are 15. They're, like, a little bit older. But not much, I don't think. Yeah.
Yeah, they were a delight.
So good.
And I think, too, like, Dan Hedaya. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, Dan Hedaya. Yeah, I mean, we need to talk about Dan Hedaya. But I was just going to say, so, them holding their own and still being sort of this beautiful, like, beating heart, comedic centerpiece, even surrounded as they are by these comedic geniuses.
Oh yeah.
It's kind of amazing that they're never upstaged. Like they hold their own and they keep this like beautiful, beautiful, tender center.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like to like on the rails, like when it could so easily have been just like very wacky.
Yeah.
Like they bring genuine emotion to it.
They do. And they keep the energy up.
Mm-hmm.
I think like it's very well... Oh,
this movie is so fast-paced and, like, so wacky. Even having seen All the President's Men,
mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't know what's happening next.
Yeah.
There's no way to know.
It's very well put together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the pacing is great, and it really highlights the women over Woodward and Bernstein. Like, this is their show.
Mm-hmm.
Woodward and Bernstein are just... They're there because, of course, they're there.
Yeah.
And because they're the ones who talk to Deep Throat. But even, yeah, like even the story they tell about how they got the name Deep Throat is because Betsy's brother got caught going to a porno and Betsy had to explain.
She's like, what does that mean?
What Deep Throat is to Arlene. And they just giggle for a while.
And then like yell it out the window, I think.
Yeah. Which just again
for,
is
for
like,
the joy of it.
These are teenage girls. Like they're giggly. They're, you know, unabashed.
Mm-hmm.
Just, it's great.
I think the phrase that kept coming up over and over again about their performance is breathy enthusiasm.
Oh.
Because they just like had this weird sort of like very excited sort of panty delivery
mm-hmm.
for everything that they're doing.
And a lot of like squealing and screaming mm-hmm. and just getting excited over little things.
Yeah, and sort of their chaos and energy is often what sort of makes the scene in their favor because it sort of throws everyone else off kilter.
Mm-hmm.
So even when they encounter Liddy on the stairs of the first, like in the first scene, they just scream and run away from him because he's like, "What's going on?"
Yeah, and like they put Liddy off kilter, which is like Liddy was a mastermind. Like,
yeah,
it's great. And I love, too, that they balance out their giddiness and their chaos with this real dialed down sort of hominess. Like, they won't They won't say shit. They say poo poo.
Yeah.
When the dog, they have to take the dog out and they're like, did he poo poo? And it's so, it's like, aw.
It's wholesome.
It's so wholesome.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's so, but it's not overdone. It's just like, oh, these, right, these are innocent children who,
without ever feeling saccharine or cloying
or saccharine.
Precious, it's, in any way.
Yeah. They're just, it's just reminding us that their worldview is not ready for the actual world.
Okay. You wanted to talk about Dan Hedaya. Let's talk about Dan Hedaya.
Well, mostly I just want to talk about Dan Hedaya and teenage girls.
Clueless.
Clueless. Because he's Cher's dad in Clueless, and he's chef's kiss.
Ugh.
He's brilliant. And I always see Dan Hedaya as kind of, I don't know, like a Harvey Keitel type, like a tough guy.
Yeah.
But I've never really seen him as a tough guy.
This is the thing.
But he just seems so gruff, but he's such a, he has such a soft, gooey center.
Yeah.
And same thing as Nixon, like he does a great Nixon impression.
He does a great Nixon impression.
But he's
without
also,
actually looking at anything like
they
Nixon.
They don't give him a fake nose or anything. But he does the peace sign heading into Marine One, and he has the mannerisms.
Yeah.
But it's so funny because he's just like in Clueless, he is bewildered.
He's like a helpless dad again.
Yeah, yeah. Totally a helpless dad. He does not know what to do. He just ends up being nice to them.
Well, and okay, this is something I actually texted Ron when I was watching it. It was like the first time we see him as Nixon, he's like berating his dog for not liking him. And I like had to stop the movie. I was laughing so hard at his line delivery.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "You're supposed to love me, Checkers."
There are so many good
one-liners.
There are
so many good one-liners. But just Dan Hedaya staring down his dog.
Yeah, just hating that dog. And even more so hating that the dog loves other people and not him.
But it was just like, I can't feel like this is like the an ominous or a nefarious Nixon when it's Dan Hedaya.
I know.
I have a hard time seeing him as a villain because I'm like, oh, you're just like, yeah, like a dad at the end of his rope.
Yeah, this is
hating the dog, not knowing about your kids. Like,
this is why I'm kind of glad all of the nefarious Nixon stuff was on tape.
Yes,
so we don't really see him as a villain. Like we know he's Nixon, and we know that he's involved and that he's
his reputation proceeds.
Yeah, but he's presented here as just a very confused dad who, I mean, who just happens to be on tape saying some rough
very
stuff.
Heinous sheet. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but it's, we don't necessarily have to see it come out of Dan Hedaya's mouth.
Oh, thank goodness, because I don't know if I could handle it.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, he's daddy. He's daddy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Do you have other things you want to talk about? I just wanted to mention how the fashion in this movie is next level.
It's so good. And it's all vintage stuff.
Is it?
Those ladies wore so much polyester.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
The sweat, the chafing.
Ugh.
I shudder to think. The flammability.
The flammability.
No open flames on set.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Like, it is astonishing to me that there were no, like, you know, what is it called when you like, oh, spontaneous combustion.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the 70s. Like, people were just, like, walking candlesticks.
And they smoked a lot.
And they also smoked a lot.
Yeah, it's amazing. More
and drank a lot, right?
Yeah.
So it's just, like, literally, like, torch elements waiting to happen.
Yeah.
You got your fuel, you got your flame, you got your engine.
And all your hairspray.
Yes.
All that Aquanet.
Oh, boy. Whatever happened to hairspray? Do people still use it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's nice to know.
You just have naturally stay put hair.
Yes. No, I just naturally have no hair, so I
You have quite a nice swoosh going on.
Thank you. Yeah. It's my pride and joy. I walked into the hair salon the other day and was like, do you know Jimmy Neutron? That, please. And they were like, say no more, say no more.
I will have one Jimmy Neutron.
One Jimmy Neutron, if you please, good sir.
Here's a coin for your troubles.
Oh, yeah. Do you have other thoughts before we move on to moments of joy?
I don't think I have other thoughts. I was really into the friendship, but we talked about that. Really pleasantly surprised that this movie would totally pass the Bechdel test.
Totally. Even though the Bechdel test is like bare minimum.
Yes, it is bare minimum. And yet.
Surprising how few movies even today.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I really appreciate how even when they were in a new situation, like they're at the White House, they've never met the president before. Both girls are not shy about asking questions and saying what they think. Like they say several times that Nixon needs to get out of Vietnam.
Yeah.
They say that, you know, all bunch of different things that they'd like to see change. And that was cool too, that they're just like, well, I think this.
Even when surrounded by like imposing dudes.
Yeah. Like there's one point when in the boardroom outside of the Oval Office, or maybe it's in the Oval Office, Arlene just kind of like pipes up and says, I have something to say. And Nixon is just like, well, go on, Arlene.
Aww. Like, he's just... Yes, Arlene. Like,
yeah, it's just like, you can say your piece. And I mean, it's kind of because they're afraid of them. But it's also, they're all afraid of teenage girls.
Yeah.
And what they may or may not know. And it's great.
Oh, it's so good. So good.
I wish I would have watched this when I was younger.
Same.
Yeah.
I really, I think, well, first of all, I would have known more about Watergate.
Yeah.
Secondly, I think I would have also found it a real treat. I mean, still now. So I just have to watch it for the rest of my life to get maximum enjoyment.
That's true.
Moments of joy?
Oh, so many.
Like everything. Everything in this movie is a moment of joy. I was just like marking down quotes that
me just
like, oh, this is hilarious. Oh, this is hilarious. The lookout dude on the radio at the opening scene, he's like, the gemstone is glistening.
Yes.
So stupid.
Yeah. I have random quotes here that I can't even place. So like,
tell me some of them.
Oh, just like, communism is immoral. I just have house coats exclamation point.
The house coats were very good.
They were very good.
And as a house coat connoisseur, I felt deep envy for them.
Yes, they were proper house coats.
Mm-hmm.
One of my moments of joy was when Arlene is still in love with Dick and she calls him my sweet prince. It's so good.
Wow. Oh, that's beautiful. I forgot that happened, but it's great.
And then also when Woodward, I can't remember the exact context, but Woodward is very put upon, and I think he's trying to fend off Bernstein, and at one point he's just like, I went to Yale! Just really struck me as funny.
Genius.
Yeah. And I mean, as I said before, seeing French Stewart playing a Larry King type.
Which totally went over my head.
I mean.
Thank you for pointing it out.
My grandmother had Larry King on like 24/7 and I could recognize Larry King types anywhere.
Okay. Yeah. So. It's not a Larry King bitch.
I mean, I'm not either, but I was just.
It's now a part of you.
Raised in that environment.
Oh man. I loved the wig tossing, all the wig tossing that Bruce McCulloch did. I loved that Dan Hedaya seems to be the same height as Michelle Williams and Kirsten Dunst. Yeah. There were several scenes where they're all lined up and it's like their heads are like, and they're standing.
Yeah.
So I was like, wait. I haven't actually looked to see if their heights are the same, but it looked very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then the line where, oh, Arlene and Betsy are like, it's the first time they're making cookies. And they're talking about how Arlene never met her dad. And Betsy's coming up with all of these scenarios for like who her dad might be. And then it just sort of like keeps spiraling as they're talking often does. And eventually her last scenario is like, what if you meet someone, marry them, fall in love, or fall in love, then get married. And then at the wedding, you see that his dad, and his dad is also your dad. And she had the most amazing line delivery saying, it's called incest, Arlene, and it's against the law.
Yeah. So good.
Just that serious PSA moment.
Yeah.
It's called incest, Arlene.
And just like, but what if?
And it just kept going.
You see his dad, and his dad is your dad.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
But best moment of the movie.
Tell me.
Was when Betsy is going to make out with Chip. And they're on the bed. And she, like, kisses him. And then just, like, hovers over him with her hair his face. And moves her hair back and forth across his face.
Just kind of whips his face with her hair. Or, like, not even whips, but, like, gently.
Like, gently, like caresses his face.
Caresses his face with her hair. It's so good.
It's so funny.
Oh, it's.
It was. It's. Oh. It was. Yeah. I am speechless with awe because it's genius and so funny.
That whole scene was so funny. Yeah.
Lots of hair acting in this movie. Lots of hair acting.
Yes. Proper hair acting.
Proper hair acting. Oh my god. Wow. All right. So, once again, I refuse to do any research about Watergate because I've already suffered enough. But looking on IMDb.
Ooh.
There was
what a font of knowledge.
An entry that was like in real life, there were no teenage girls involved in the 1970s Watergate political scandal in the U.S.
I don't think they can say that definitively.
I don't think they can either.
No.
But yeah. So IMDb, setting the record straight. Kind of. Trying to. Do you have any movie connections?
All the President's Men.
All the President's Men. All of them.
Yeah.
That's the one.
But
a lot of movies about Nixon, though. My God.
Yeah, there are.
I just skimmed the surface. There's so many.
Yeah.
And Dan Hedaya is in another movie about President Nixon, but he's not President Nixon.
Oh, interesting.
It's the one that Anthony Hopps is President Nixon in.
Oh, I didn't see
I think
that
it's called Nixon.
Sounds about right. Yeah. Yeah. I think also Clueless is a connection for me.
Yeah.
Because of that sweet, sweet 90s... girl buddy movie and Dan Hedaya
Daddy Dan. I've been thinking a lot about conspiracy movies recently. Because I also recently watched The Firm, which is great, and I loved it. But thinking about how a lot of my favorite movies are conspiracy movies or revolve around a conspiracy or something like that, and how I think maybe that's also the appeal of Watergate, is just this sort of like, mass, you know, secret that people need to uncover and do really bonkers things to uncover it.
Yeah.
And it sort of like got me thinking about how, I think maybe that's like a bit of a residue from my conservative Christian background. I feel like conservative Christians love conspiracy.
Oh yeah.
Because like, I mean, they're living a conspiracy.
Yeah.
So it's like very comforting and soothing to them, I think, to have this sort of like external confirmation that like, oh yes, this is like very dangerous and like, you know, the world is a bad place and, you know, but truth will out and, you know, good will triumph, etc.
Well, the whole idea of knowing something that other people don't.
Yes. And also this sort of secrecy and us against the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, the experts are wrong, mm-hmm. but we have the true knowledge as like, you know, the sole standout.
Yeah, and they're just really afraid of us, and that's why they're
lying. Yeah. So anyways, we're spiraling a bit about that. But, I think conspiracy movies are everywhere, and that's sort of like the central hub of all action movies, really,
mm-hmm.
when you get down to it. Thrillers. Whole genres are based on conspiracy, so I guess
it's true.
We just love conspiracy in general, not just conservative Christians.
Yeah.
But conservative Christians in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, so in summation, what did we learn? And juiciest bits, juiciest butts. This one is a tricky one.
It is. I learned that potentially teenage girls were involved in the Watergate scandal.
You should write an editorial to the IMDb page.
I should.
A rebuttal.
Yes.
Like, cite your sources.
Cite your source. Citation needed.
According to a little movie called Dick, you are wrong.
You cannot say that girls were not involved. Juiciest bits, juiciest butts.
It's difficult because we have, on one hand, younger teen girls.
Yeah, that's awkward.
And then on the other hand, fusty old white men.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real doozy.
I'm going to go with Chip.
I mean, young Ryan Reynolds.
Baby Ryan
Reynolds. All right.
Yeah.
Fine. So that leaves me with... Oh, I don't want Ryan Reynolds. No.
Oh, fine.
I want... Well, you can have him. It's my gift to you. I allow
Thank
it.
Thank you.
I'm just saying for myself, I feel I deserve better.
Oh, Anna Gasteyer.
Who's that?
The secretary. Another SNL connection.
Oh. Good bet?
Yeah.
Do we see it?
Yeah.
Ish?
Ish.
Okay.
She's all wearing right. like a 70s polyester dress, so it's clingy.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I'll go with that.
Okay.
Yeah. Very good.
You can
Thank
trust
you.
Me on this.
I will trust you. Thank you. You know your butts as well.
I'm very particular about my butts.
You do have a doctorate in butts, so.
Yes, that's true.
They had to hide it by calling it literature, but we all know the truth. And film. Do you have a degree in literature, or is it just film? Or is it both?
It's both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right, well.
But it's weird, because it's actually a doctor of philosophy.
So it's a triple degree.
Yeah, even though.
No one cares about philosophy.
No.
Only so, assholes care about.
But yeah, it's English and film.
Sorry, philosophy majors. No one likes you. Sorry. Well. In summation, what I learned is that if you're going on the run, it's always best to pair matching rain slickers with fluffy slippers.
Oh.
A startling choice, you'd think, because if you're out in the rain, you wouldn't want the fluffy slippers. But no, the fashion moment is everything.
Fair enough.
So that's what I learned.
Very good. I love it.
Also, always look your best.
Always look your
best. Even if you're meeting strange men in a car park beneath many layers of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, but take a buddy.
But take a buddy.
And also cut up a flag.
Yeah, who gives a fuck? Come on.
Do it.
Come on.
Make yourself a nice bikini top.
Patriotism is over. Nationalism is out.
Ooh.
No one cares about it. Empire is still around, but it may end soon.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. And that's it.
That's it.
Maybe that's our tagline for the end.
That's it.
And that's it. It's too abrupt. All right.
Well,
I'll keep workshopping it. That's it. I'm Charlie.
They've been Charlie. I've been Maddie.
This has been the Juiciest Bits.
Podcast.
Recording. Piece of entertainment. Goodbye.
Goodbye.